Spontaneous applause for Parkson. Oh! I say. Yes. Thank you very much. I hope you got some merch. There's a very fine looking gentleman there down at the front. You want to just stand up, gentleman at the front? And show us. He's a studio model. Looking glorious. Sanjeev Bhaskar. He's in a non-speaking role tonight.
Got nothing to do with an evening. Just
Mark thought I was leaving him, but actually all I've done is I've come up into what is, it's not the laughter pulpit, but for the next 30 seconds, ladies and gentlemen, an edition of the Laughter Lift, which is the Laughter Pulpit. Mark, you'll never believe this, but I had a very exciting motorbike ride over here. Whilst I was waiting for the bike to pick me up outside Greatest Hits Radio this evening.
Four till seven every weekday.
I found a suitcase of abandoned little furry animals. Furry kittens, to be precise. Say ah.
Ah.
I phoned the RSPCA, nice lady at the other end. She said, are they moving? I said, I'm not sure, but that would explain the suitcase. It is very nice. I should mention for podcast listeners, I am in the pulpit and I'm like 60 feet high. What a magnificent church this is. I'm reminded of the time I was planning my wedding to the good lady ceramicist here indoors. I said to the vicar, how much does it cost to hire a church singing group? He said, do you mean a choir? I said, okay, how much does it cost to acquire a church singing group? Said from a pulpit.
Good.
In my younger years, I have to admit, I got thrown out of my church youth group for claiming Jesus spoke with a lisp. It was a real slap in the faith. The good lady ceramicist Herring Dawes is actually in the audience tonight. Earlier on, she asked me what mansplaining actually meant. I mean, I wasn't sure what to do. What would you have said?
I would have explained it to her.
There you go, exactly. But I do have to be on my best behavior, Mark. She said to me this evening, if you make any more Backstreet Boy puns, I'm going to leave you. I said, tell me why. I mean, that's all very well, but do you know what's real? In the interval, that's gone a lot higher. You know what's real? That's a whole lot better. Mark, a couple of reviews while I descend to your level. Oh, thank you.
The worst thing is now he's been up there, he feels like he belongs there. So, two things. So firstly, there's the live action Little Mermaid. Although when we say live action, obviously a large section of it, particularly the underwater stuff, is CG that just happens to have some sort of live action faces stuck onto it. Because Disney are kind of basically going through all their animated back catalogue and doing, in inverted commas, live-action remakes of them. And when it was announced that the live-action Little Mermaid was going to have an African-American star, all these nutball, right-wing, wingnut, Fox News watchers went, oh, no, you can't, Little Mermaid can't be black. Said, why? Well, Hans Christian Andersen was Danish. And somebody actually said, because she lives in the bottom of the sea. Yeah, and also she's not real. It's like, do you remember when it was a bunch of, religious fundamentalists got really annoyed with Darren Aronofsky taking liberties with the story of Noah, the story of a 700-year-old man building a floating zoo? So now we have the live-action Little Mermaid with Halle Bailey in the lead role. She's very good. The film itself is very much like the other Disney retreads of their animated movies. I will always prefer the animated film because there's something about animation that can do fantasy in a way that sometimes live-action can't. But it's kind of fine. Anyway, it's got some new songs and some old favorites. Here's a clip.
Sebastian, if you had just seen it up there, the ship rode on the wind, and they filled the sky with fire.
Okay, okay, listen to me. The human world is a mess. Life under the sea is better than anything they got going on up there.
The seaweed is always greener in somebody else's lake. You dream about going up there, but that is a big mistake. Just look at the world around you, right here on the ocean floor. Such wonderful things surround you. What more is you looking for? Under the sea, under the sea. Darling, it's better, don't worry, it's wetter. Take it from me. Up on the shore, they work all day. Out in the sun, they slave away. While we devoting full time to floating under the sea.
The songs are fun. It's Rob Marshall, who obviously knows exactly what he's doing with musicals. Lin-Manuel Miranda is involved, both in co-producing and in writing some of the new songs. You've got Melissa McCarthy as Ursula the Sea Witch. And as you probably know, the original figure of Ursula is kind of inspired by Divine. And she's very much channeling that. There's a big effects finale at the end. So it's fine. It's perfectly all right. If you love the original, it doesn't add anything. It's longer and it's got a little bit sort of more spectacular, but it's fine. And it's just kind of interesting that people got so exercised about something which is basically so innocuous. The worst you can say about The New Little Mermaid is it's a bit bland. The best you can say about it is people who love that story will love it. And it's great that they've kind of decided to recast the central character. I have to say my own vote for something to see this week is Sisu. It's a Finnish film from Jamari Helander, who made Rare Exports and Big Game. But at the very beginning of the film, they say this. Sisu is a Finnish word that cannot be translated. It means a white-knuckle form of courage and unimaginable determination. Sisu manifests itself when all hope is lost. Setting is Finnish Lapland, 1944. Towards the end of the Second World War, most of the, there's very little dialogue, and what there is of it is mainly in English. So, the Nazis are retreating, they are being driven out of the land. Meanwhile, we meet our central character who is prospecting for gold. He finds some gold, he then starts to head back to his village, and as he is heading back to his village, he meets the Nazis coming the other way. Here's a clip.
Get off the horse! Where you think you're going, old man? There's nothing down there. We made sure of that. What do you got there?
So what happens is that they find that he's got a bunch of gold. The Nazis want the gold. He says almost nothing in the whole film, man of very few words, decides that he wants his gold back, and the only way to do that is to kill all the Nazis. Now, one of the interesting things, if you're a fan of Indiana Jones, you know this is the new Indiana Jones film just played in Cannes, is that one of the things that Indiana Jones demonstrated is that screen violence is okay if it's against Nazis. You can kill Nazis in any way you like, it's okay, they're Nazis. And so it's squishy, it's fantastically gory and unnecessarily violent in a way which is kind of really, really jolly. It involves pickaxes, machine guns, landmines, although they're not always in the land. At one point, a landmine is thrown at somebody's head, and that's very entertaining. And the best thing about it is that it's got this kind of, its sensibility is very kind of pulpy. The way in which the graphics are done at the beginning kind of invokes Tarantino, but without the awful self-reflexiveness. If what you want, if like you're somebody who enjoys the squelchiness of Evil Dead 2, or of course the new Evil Dead film, this is really good fun because you know exactly where you are. He's a prospector, he's got gold, they're Nazis, they're going the other way. He meets them, none of them are going to survive. The end. It does exactly what it says on the tin. It's called Sisu, and it is really good fun, but it is absolutely blood-splattered from beginning to end, which I think is a good thing.
Was that a spoiler at the
end? No.
You said they all die.
They're Nazis. It's the end of World War II. That's what happens.
I see. Okay, I was just checking.
The film is chaptered, okay? Here are the chapter titles of the chapters in Sisu. Chapter 1, the gold. Chapter 2, the Nazis. Chapter 3, minefield. Chapter 4, the legend. Chapter 5, scorched earth. And chapter 6, kill them all. There you go.
Okay, time for our special guest of honor. You'll know him from The Patriot, Black Hawk Down, Peter Pan, The Death of Stalin, Hotel Mumbai, Event Horizon, Divorcing Jack, The End of the Affair, Green Zone, Fury, London, Mass. TV series, this is the entire list. Awake, The OA, The Boys Presents, Diabolical, The Curse of Steptoe, State Within, Case Histories, Brotherhood. He is, of course, also known for his portrayal of Lucius Malfoy in the Harry Potter film series. And now his name is on a high-quality water bottle. All the way from Showbiz North London via Notting Hill, let's say hello to Jason Isaacs.
This is slightly freaky because I've always thought of the two of you as leaders of some kind of cult, and now in a church. Now, you might wonder why I'm wearing a hat, because it seems a little bit antisocial, because and the reason I was in Notting Hill is I've sat for 6.5 hours in a hairdresser's chair trying to make me look like the guy I'm about to play next, and it looks a bit like that. There you go. There you go.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, but here's the interesting thing about this. So Jason has spent six... Jason spent six hours having his hair dyed back to what it would actually look like in the real world. And I said to you once, because you turn up, we were standing, we're almost exactly the same age, and I said to you...
I have no idea what you're talking about.
And I said to you, Jason, do you dye your hair? And you went, no, other people dye my hair.
Perfect answer.
We started out the same age, but as you may have noticed if you watch any of my films, I have been drinking desiccated Celia Imrie with eels, and consequently, my age is going in reverse order, and I'm somewhere coming up to 39 now.
Of course.
I'm going to keep it that way.
Always and forever. So the first and only official piece of Hello to Jason Isaacs merchandise has landed. 5% of the sales go to Red Cross, and you picked Red Cross. Tell us why the proceeds go to Red Cross.
So they very kindly got in touch and said, we're going to sell some stuff with your name on it. It's not really my name. It's you know, a tribute to their show. And I said, fine, I don't want any money if you do sell them, but give them to the Red Cross because they're an amazing organisation if you've never gotten... But, wait, let me get... There is a walk on September the 30th. The Red Cross do a billion wonderful things domestically and internationally, but they do a lot of stuff for refugees. It's a walk for refugees. September the 30th, from July the 1st, you can sign up on the British Red Cross site and walk for 10K around London. You end up in Vauxhall Park Gardens with a stage and screens and entertainment. Although the person who wrote it to me didn't realise predictive tests said screws. There'll be screws, apparently. And do that if you feel like doing something wonderful on September 30th. A great organisation. And the refugees need our help, not sending back to Rwanda or criminalising. There we go. Yeah.
Okay.
Not back to Rwanda. They don't come from Rwanda. They do not need shipping off to Rwanda. Anyway.
Which I think refers back to your earlier comment about Suella Deville, doesn't it?
Yeah. Exactly.
Okay. Wow. It's very nice to see you.
Why are you reading all those credits up? I was like, I mean, I've been doing this for 500 years, like you two.
Well, I could have said, I suppose I could just have said, ladies and gentlemen, Jason Isaacs.
You could have done and saved 5 minutes of the podcast. Okay. I'm hoping to be on take 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7, by the way.
Yeah, I think so. I think they're all going to drop together.
Excellent.
If that's okay with you. Now, if you've... loads of people always come up and say, can you just say hello to Jason? So I say, yes, I'm going to store them up. So on behalf of everybody, and Mark gets the same, everybody who comes up to us and says, can you say hello to Jason? I said, this is our moment. Hello, Jason.
Hello, Jason.
Thanks very much.
Right.
Hello.
So
I'd say I do, it still happens in strange places around the world. People come up and they say, hello to Jason Isaacs. Although sometimes they get it wrong. They go, hello, Jason Isaacs. And I go, that's not how you meant to do it. But I'm often still with people and they go, what the... what's that all about? And I go, it's just too complicated to explain. Give me your phone, I'll subscribe you to someone.
Yeah,
there you go.
Which is great.
You know that we had an email from somebody who, they said, somebody came and said, found out that they were a listener to the podcast and they went, hello to Jeremy Irons.
That's fair enough. I met the great, I might have told this before, I met the great Sir Alan Parker, director of, you know, Bugsy Malone and Birdie and many other wonderful films, Midnight Express. And he wouldn't know who I am from anyone. He's certainly never seen any of my work. And they said, Sir Alan, Jason Isaacs. And he went, as in hello to Jason Isaacs. And I went, as in that.
Is it still on Google? If you go on Google on a laptop or a proper computer and you right. put in Jason Isaacs, it comes up, hello to it's Jason Isaacs.
I Google myself no more than 3 or 4 times a day, so I'm not sure.
Oh, okay, all right.
I don't know.
I'll check that. I'll check that a bit later. But so the reason for this hair yes. is what?
We're getting the band back together, you know. No, I'm in a film of a book called The Salt Path. Who's anybody here read the book The Salt Path? Thanks very much to that one person. I will throw you a fish if you clap. But everybody else, don't bother. The film's coming up. No, do read it. It's a wonderful book. I'm about to make a film with Gillian Anderson of this beautiful, beautiful book, The Salt Path, which I could tell you all about, but there will be a time when I want to come on a show and tell you all about that. I should tell you about things that are imminently coming out. Not
well, tell,
will
us
be coming
a bit,
out
tell us a bit about it.
Okay. It's a... there is a couple, there was a couple, it's a real story, who in 1 week had the most devastating things you could imagine happen to them. They lost their home, their farm, their business, all their money, and he'd had a bad shoulder for a while, Moth, the husband, and they went to the doctor to see rheumatism, and turns out he had a terminal degenerative condition that gave him not very long to live. And their world just spun, and his wife, his extraordinary wife, Ray, said, let's just walk. He said, what? He said, let's just walk. They didn't know how much time they had left together. They had no money. They couldn't get a council house. They couldn't even afford to pay for camping sites. They had to phone their kids at university and say, you can't come home at the end of term. There is no home. You've got to find a job. I'm so sorry. We'll try and help you as best we can. And they walked the coast where Mark lives now, up Devon and Cornwall. And when they started, he, yay, represent Devon and Cornwall down there. And, and when they started, Moth was very much incapacitated. His leg didn't work, his arm didn't work, his cognitive abilities were failing. And they walked for months and months and months. It was freezing, they were starving, it was very difficult conditions. And his conditions, his faculties started to come back, and his legs started to work, and his arms started to work. And it's she, when they finally finished the walks, it was too cold, they had to go and stay with someone. He couldn't remember lots of it. After a while, he couldn't remember. And she wrote a memoir for him, just for him, for his birthday present, to remember these amazing walk and the people they met, and it, I think it sold millions of copies. That's what happened. It's a beautiful, beautiful love story, isn't it?
Yeah. And you're shooting down, you're on location?
We're shooting in Devon and Cornwall. I'm really sorry if anyone goes to visit there and it says you cannot enter this wonderful tourist site. There's a film going on, it's us. and they're amazing people, Moth and Ray. They've opened their lives to us, and I hope we do their story justice and that you like it.
Have you worked with Gillian Anderson before?
I've not. I'm a little bit scared because she's Gillian Anderson. Because she's so, I'm so tempted to swear now that you've come off the BBC, but I won't because I know you don't like it. Well, I'm in a church, so I'll just say she's so f***ing brilliant that I'm a bit intimidated. But once we get naked together, I'm sure it'll be fine.
You have to. is that part of the story, or that's?
Well, I'm not. I don't want to tell you everything. Read the book. So, you know.
I don't want to read the book. I want to see the film.
Oh, well, yeah. I want to make the film. I don't want to get fired before I start.
It does seem to the casual observer that you work almost non-stop. It yeah. seems to me that you are in, I mean, like we just mentioned some of the films and some of the TV shows that you were in, but you have something which everybody wants. Well, Gillian Anderson well, certainly
employment.
Wants.
Employment, I don't know. No, I've been doing it for a really long time, and I just keep throwing a lot of pasta at the wall. You're lucky. I try and pick the best things I can. I look better when I'm in things that are really well written with good actors that are directed well, and if I'm lucky enough to get to do those things, you get the reflected glory of it. And if you're lucky enough as an actor, let me say this, you know, if 1 in 5 turns out great, you're lucky, and that's when you try and stack it up. If I was starving, I'd do anything. I'm not quite starving, so I try and pick the good ones. And there've been a few. I had a few buses in a row the last few years, but there were many years when they were all tramps.
So have we, I think we've spoken to you about some of those buses.
Well, what, are you trying to get me to name the terrible films?
No.
Sorry, the good
no,
ones.
No, because we love you every time you come on.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
Tell us about, when do we get to see Archie?
So Archie is a 4-part series about the life of Cary Grant. And I made it with Jeff Pope, who's an amazing real-life storyteller. And it's made for ITV and ITV Hub and stuff. And it'll be out, I think, in the autumn. But anyone who thinks they know anything about Cary Grant, unless you've read the biographies, you really don't. Cary Grant was a character he created, a brand in some ways he curated, a man who in some ways needed to be the most famous person in the world to try and fix all the troubles he had on the inside. And of course it didn't fix him. And he was a very challenged, troubled man who struggled with a billion things. And we cover a lot of his life. I do a lot, you know, there's some aging, there's some prosthetics and all dodgy walking. But mostly we cover the period of time when he married Diane Cannon. I spent a lot of time talking to Diane Cannon and Carrie's daughter, having conversations with an 80-odd-year-old that you should never have with anybody at that age, asking some very intimate details. And she, quite frankly, was happy to share. Anyone who thinks, oh, he's a suave lady killer, no, he was incredibly anxious and OCD and ADHD and drank a lot and was troubled and angry and had a blighted youth. So anyway, tell that story. It's out soon. And I've seen it. So I'm in it, so that's a bit weird. Obviously, I'm rubbish. But it looks extraordinary, and the other actors are fantastic in it. Laura Aikman, who plays Diane Cannon, just walked in as Diane Cannon. And it's one of those, you know, pull the curtain back on Oz stories.
When you said, you shouldn't have those conversations, but she was eager to share. Just when we were backstage, when you just turned up, and you said something, you said it as a joke, but there is a great truth in it. You said, I met somebody for the first time. Of course, I immediately overshared.
Yeah.
And she... It is an interesting thing that you are very front foot in telling people about how you feel about things and about, you know, you are... Is that in any way connected to being an actor? Because, yes. Again, I will go back to the fact that when we were young, I kind of idol worshipped you because I thought you were the coolest kid in school. And then you told me later on, I wasn't. I was terrified. Terrified looks yeah. cool. But now you're completely the opposite. Like, you literally meet people and you start talking to them, and within 5 minutes you're telling them, you know, your life story.
What troubles me? Well, it's true. Well, first of all, I just came back from you're all very kind. You want to talk about the Red Cross. I try and do stuff. You know, if you get a little bit famous, if you don't use it for good, you feel like a real turd. You know, there's something slightly embarrassing or shameful about getting famous for doing something as silly as dressing up. So I try and do good work with it somehow. But I also do things that you have to do. So I just come back from a fan convention in Detroit. And those are exactly what you imagine they are. Hundreds of people, thousands of people come up to the table. They pay some money, you sign an autograph, you have a chat with them. I would say an enormous number of them arrive at the table thinking I'm something special. That, you know, I deserve some extra status. That I somehow take up more important space in the world than they do. And I think it's really important, especially in today's world when fame is a religion, you know, to let people understand quickly, those people I met this weekend, that I'm just an idiot who forgets to take the bins out and wears makeup for a living, you know. And I do think you get elevated and undue status for being on television and film. I'm here with a microphone, but nothing I have to say is any more interesting or thought out than anything anybody here might have to say. I just get the mic.
But the thing
and
is...
So that, sorry, so, just finish. So that's why I do... I think two things happen. One is I want people to know that nobody is anything special, and including me. And secondly, my job is to keep my emotions close to the surface and be childlike yeah. and be vulnerable. And I meet those people who are closed off and they couldn't do the job. So, you know, there's a few famous people I won't mention, but you meet them, they're wonderfully famous actors and wonderful, and they're always on the edge of tears or anger or something. And I remember the first time it happened to me thinking, that person's really mentally ill.
Who was that?
Someone with an Oscar. Let's just say that. I will tell you backstage. And they were easily reduced to tears and stuff. And I thought, oh no. And since it's happened again and again, I thought, oh, it's someone who pulls the walls down. Make sure there is a thin layer between them and anyone else that they meet always so that they can connect.
How much of the work that you are about to do or how much of the work that you're planning are you thinking might be affected by the writer's strike in America?
Well, a huge amount. I mean, the writer's strike in America, one of the key issues is AI. You know, and God bless them, good luck to them. They're fighting the fight for everyone else. But AI is going to be everywhere in all of our lives.
But their specific thing is they don't want AI doing the first version that they are then asked to rewrite. Because they think, you know, you could say to AI, write me a 90-minute thriller with an exploding helicopter and a thing, and then get somebody to rewrite it.
Or write me 20 episodes of a show in which the cops do, you know, and then you can tweak it. I don't know what will happen in the negotiations. I wish them good luck, but a huge amount. Everyone I know in America is all that production is frozen. And the actors we just voted on whether our guild has the right to strike when they go into the negotiations. I'm sure that will come back with a yes. And it's tough because I remember the last writer's strike when lots of my friends had to sell their homes or leave Los Angeles or get out of the business and stuff. And the last one lasted
10 weeks?
Yeah, this is... This is not about pay. This is about some serious core issues in which there's no middle ground. So I don't know what's going to happen. But it's, I mean, I could talk about the writer's strike and the actor's strike forever. I don't know that the audience like it, but it is, it's an interesting thing that Hollywood is the most unionized industry in America. And thank God, because without them, the exploitation of everybody else would be unholy.
When I went down the everything that you've been involved with, I didn't mention the greatest television show of all time, which is The West Wing. And you were in three episodes of that?
I was, yeah, yeah.
And your character was?
Yes, he was.
Oh, great.
Can't remember.
But you were in the great. But that means you were in the greatest TV series of all
time. I was. I'll tell you what, I was in, I don't know how many people saw or remember The West Wing, but it is the greatest show ever made. Thanks so much. But the great story at the heart of The West Wing, as well as every major issue to face mankind, dealt brilliantly through drama, is the great unconsummated love story was Josh and Donna. And I loved that show. I'd watched it for years. Then suddenly I was in it, and I was getting it together with Donna. And the whole time I was thinking, no, save yourself for Josh. And there's a scene in which it said in the script was, it's morning, Donna has slept with the photographer. So the director said, okay, let's just do one. She's making send an email. The camera will pan around. We'll see you lying in the bed behind. So we did that. He goes, let's do another one now. You come up and put your hands on Donna's shoulders from behind, you know. And I knew, I still know, her name is Janelle, and she's friendly with me. She's friendly with my wife, right? So I come up and put my hands on her shoulders behind. She turns around, stands up, sticks her tongue right down my throat, wrestles me down onto the bed, and snogs me for about 5 minutes. The director goes, cut. And I go, Janelle? What was that? And she goes, freebie.
Jason, just while you're here, we never know when we're going to get a chance to talk to you again. The Crowded Room, tell us about that.
The Crowded Room is coming. That's the thing I suppose I should be, I don't know, I just come here to talk to you, but the thing I should be publicising, because it's out in a week or two, is a mini-series. No, not allowed to say mini-series anymore. Limited series, special event limited series, whatever it is. Anyway, it's a mini-series, and it's out on Apple, and it stars Tom Holland, written by Kiefer Goldsman, a brilliant man who wrote Beautiful Mind, and it's about what they used to call multiple personality disorder, now call displaced identity disorder, something like that. Anyway, it's based roughly, inspired by a true story, The Many Minds of Billy Milligan, which you can see as a documentary, and it is extraordinary. I don't want to give any spoilers away. Tom Holland, I'd be very surprised if he doesn't win a bunch of awards for it, but it is psychological, psychiatric, thriller, suspense thing. It's just, it's not like most things. It's not a murder mystery. There's no chalk line on the floor. It is Amanda Seyfried's in it, a lot of wonderful actors in it, and it was really something. It was really something to see. Apple doesn't hold back when they make something, and they got Tom Holland in it. It was New York. My bits was set in London. And the Kiefer is a friend of mine because he wrote some of the Star Trek, and he said, do you want to do this thing? I've written you a part, and it's in London. I went, great. And they sent me a movement order to fly to New York for costume fitting. And I went, why don't we just do the costume fitting in London? And he went, because we're shooting in Brooklyn. And I went, what, Camden Lock and Primrose Hill? And he went, yeah, don't worry, we're going to build it. And so we shot in New York. But it's I've seen it all, and it's I think it's really interesting, and it's got some amazing acting in it.
Just one more thing, Jason. Although you're very welcome to to stay with us when we do our questions. It would be nice to
Excellent.
Have you.
Thank you very much.
With us giving us some emotional support. I know you're very proud of Mass, which we've talked to you about on the program before. It's an astonishing film. But so that to one side, just as we talked about Mass, is there one thing that you've done which you're very proud of, which maybe doesn't come up in conversation, but which you look at and go, I'm good at that. I'm glad I did that.
Oh, geez, I'm good in something. I would never say that anything. I think the film of Peter Pan is a staggeringly beautiful film, and it came out and took 27p and a nectar point, when it came out. And over the years, it's gathered this huge audience, and young women, women actually, because it was 20 years ago, come up to me all the time, particularly at conventions and other times, and go, I love that film, and I don't think they understand why, and not mean to be rude and mansplain, but many men have made films of Peter Pan. Spielberg famously wishes he hadn't made Hook, but they keep making a film about this boy grown up, or something to do with the boy. It's a film about a young girl who's told, your childhood's over. Now it's time to be a woman, be a mother, have a family. She was like, I'm 12. I share a bedroom with my brothers. And it's about how difficult it is to be a little girl when the world expects you to be a woman. And in the world she dreams up, there's a man who she's attracted to because she is on the cusp of puberty, but he's repulsive because he's a man and he looks like the only man she's ever met, which is her dad. Yeah. And that's J.M. Barrie's story. And it's the reason they still sell that story, you know, the book sell and play sell. And I think it's a staggering achievement, that film. And the music's amazing, the costume is amazing, the sets are amazing. And P.J. Hogan, who was a genius, was really put in Hollywood jail after that film, and he deserved quite the opposite. I think he's an amazing filmmaker.
Also worth saying, in terms of films that you've been in that didn't get the attention at the time but have subsequently become cult classics, is Event Horizon.
Yeah, yeah.
Event Horizon is now cited by every science fiction film.
And copied all the time as well.
So,
but, you know, that question about looking back, all I ever think about is the next one. You know, I just keep thinking about the next one, because you can't look back in your catalogue and, oh, that was a marvellous moment. It doesn't matter if no one ever sees anything I've ever made. The experience, I'm about to go and tell a story with Gillian about these two extraordinary people, and then I'll do the next one. So I don't really think about audiences or you know, what effect these things have on people. I get to make them, which is the real privilege.
Well, this audience has really appreciated you. Jason Isaacs, ladies and gentlemen. That's the whole point. Jason's going to stay with us. We're just going to do a little reset because we just have a couple more guests to come onto the stage. This is going to be questions, shmestions, live. Mark hasn't seen the questions, so who knows how that's going to go.
Okay, so look, we do this. For those of you that, you know, if you subscribe to the thing, you'll know that one of the things that happens in our takes is that we have this section called questions, shmestions. And when we do questions, shmestions, we have a jingle. And the jingle is a piece of music followed by a voice that we ask the audience to, you know, can anybody provide the perfect voice? And so since we are live, we've decided that we will do a jingle live. Now, I know this seems like an awful lot of effort for what is basically a jingle, but believe me, it's worth it, okay?
Yes, that's a very good explanation. So on stage, we have Sarit Wilson Chen and Ollie Fox. Give them a round of applause, please. So, Ollie has kindly agreed to do a version of the theme that coincidentally sounds quite similar to the one we use, but we don't have the rights to use in a live show. But it's sort of just slightly altered. And then Sarit is going to give it large for the feature name. And then we'll crack on with some questions. Do we have the ability to take questions from the audience in case we need that? Okay, all right, let's...
Why don't I wander around with my microphone?
Yeah, okay, so...
I'm jumping off the stage, here we go.
All right, so our wandering microphone is going to be Jason.
Am I right in thinking that Ollie's going to do... We're going to do two versions of it, one which is the version of the thing and then one which is the version which we actually have the mechanical rights to. Is that correct?
Yes, I think that's right. That's correct.
You'll be fine. Ollie and I were in a band together for ages, the Railtown Bottlers. This is the clarinet player from the Railtown Bottlers. So, yeah.
Okay. So this is, of course, Questions, Smestions, live from the Union Chapel with our elite audience and a very appreciative audience. Let's take it away, Ollie.
Questions.
Very good. Thank you very much.
Holy baby.
Mark is now embracing people on stage.
Thank you.
Okay, so if we have a limited amount of time for questions, but we have a very first-rate portable microphone operator who's just down here. So I've got some questions here. Can we have the lights up just so we can see if there's a... Can you shout oi if you've got a question?
Oi.
Right, okay. Jason will find you. I've got a question here. Question from Evan. Mark recently mentioned that he was pretty good at voiceovers. Of course, there's the reason retouching audio, but why would other filmmakers do it? For example, Mark Jenkins' film Bait. Why dub over the actors? Likewise with Ennis Main. Would love to hear Mark's take on this.
Well, there's a very good reason for Mark Jenkins dubbing them. Mark Jenkins uses Clockwork cameras that aren't synced for sound recording, and so he doesn't overdub the actors with other actors. He doesn't record sound on location. He just films it on location, and then he gets the actors to fill in the voices afterwards. So he's doing what early cinema would do. And as he says, the weird thing is, if you film anybody saying, "The quick brown fox jumped over the lazy dog," and then you say to them, "Say it again," weirdly, because of the way people speak, they'll say it almost exactly the same time, so it's very easy to sync. So he does it because of the way he films. I also think it kind of creates an interesting disjunct between the sound and the thing, but he literally does it because he uses clockwork cameras, and it's old cinema, so there's no on-location sound.
Question from Billy. Simon, which film star or character would you most want as Tottenham manager? I mean, anyone. Ted Lasso would do. The only Hollywood and Tottenham story, I don't know if anyone saw this photograph today of Jane Mansfield at White Hart Lane in 1959 with a crowd of over, like 100% men going, have I died and gone to heaven? That looks like Jane Mansfield at White Hart Lane in 1959. So I'll go for Jane Mansfield. What would you think?
It's a sports question.
Okay, sorry, I shouldn't have. Out in the audience, yes, Jason is thrusting a microphone at you. Oh, you again, yes, hello.
Yes, thank you, and hello to Jason Isaacs.
Yeah, who are you and what's your question?
Well, I have a question for all of you, but I was wondering, Jason, your appearance on West Wing, I just want to say kudos on Northern Irish accent and thank you for representing us. But more generally, what do you think are the most difficult accents to portray on screen? And perhaps for both of you, Simon and Mark, what do you think are the most difficult
famously great accents?
But what do you think are the most difficult accents for people to portray on screen if it's not their own? Thank you.
Well, Jason should answer that first of all.
I wouldn't want to have to play Russell Crowe in Robin Hood. That's all.
Is there something, Jason, about that? It seems to me that the Northern Ireland accent is one of those accents particularly difficult for actors to get right.
Well, it depends. I had Jimmy Nesbitt sleeping on my couch without paying rent for a couple of years at drama school, so I find it easier than other people. Something you've heard a lot is much easier. I'm about to do Burton-on-Trent, which is quite hard because it's got some Birmingham vowels, some London vowels, some RP vowels, and something you haven't heard before, basically. If you've heard it a lot, it's easier to do. And if you've got an ear for... If you have a very tenuous hold on your own personality, like I've got, and you spent a lifetime trying to sound like the people you're talking to so they don't judge you...
And if you could answer that in Scouse now, do us your Scouse.
Yeah, well, I talked like that. I was 12 years old, and I figured you couldn't. I moved to London, everybody took the piss out of me in the first day of school. So I went to school like that, and I came home talking like that. I was like, I will not put up with that one more second. So...
Okay, anyone else got a question? There's a hand up there, a pale arm has risen through the dark.
Hello to Jason. Mark, have you seen the new Evil Dead yet?
No. It's been really busy.
Are you excited about the new series of the Sex and the City sequel?
No.
Thank you.